If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, how are you folks? Hope you had a great weekend. I'm recording this on Sunday evening after having just got back from the homeland, from Scotland, where I was up for a very short and sweet 24 hours hosting the Scottish Music Awards, which is all in aid of Nordoff and Robbins, an incredible music therapy charity. If you're not aware of it, go and have a look on their socials at the amazing work that they do. And we raised a ton of cash for the charity, which is so important to pay for therapists to be able to help so many children and young people with lots of different life-threatening illnesses and disabilities. And it was a real joy to be part of and to help raise a load of money, and loads of congratulations as well to all the winners of the Scottish Music Awards at the Barlands, the world famous Barlands. So I'm a little bit fatigued and a little bit gruffly on the voice from hosting last night's awards ceremony. But that is not going to stop me from being here to deliver you yet another episode. I hope you're not getting bored of us soundtracking. This one was a very last minute booking. I've been desperately trying to get hold of our guest since I saw their new film a couple of months back now, actually. A film that I've been talking to various people connected to it and collaborators for quite a while. So I've just been so thrilled that just over, I think, the space of a day, we were managed to lock the one and only Lynn Ramsey down to talk about her new film, Die My Love. She's just been out in the States launching the film. You know, it's an intense film. And so I imagine for Lynn and Jennifer Lawrence, who've been doing the heavy lifting on talking about the film, I can imagine it being an exhausting, but also a very special time in terms of the fact that the film is getting great response and people want to hear them talk about it. So I am so happy that I managed to get a hold of Lynn and record another soundtracking episode with her. The last time we had Lynn on soundtracking was back at Glasgow Film Festival, I mean, quite a few years ago now, where I was lucky enough to record a live episode with her. It's got to be about 7 years ago. But I should say, it's not just Lynn that joins us today. We're really glad, actually, that we were joined halfway through the interview by her music supervisor, who was, well, he was originally brought on as her music supervisor on this film. And then his role became much more collaborative with Lynn, as you'll hear them talk about. So to kind of put a label on what Rafe Burchill's role was with regards to Lynn and the music on this, I think you'll kind of discover that it was a lot more than a music supervisor as we get into the conversation. But it's really sweet because halfway through, Lynn, we were talking about Rafe and she's like, is he not going to join us on here? And then he was in the waiting room waiting to, he just wanted to listen on the podcast, but we were like, come on, come in and have a chat. So it was really brilliant to be able to involve him in the conversation, not least because it also let us talk about Lynn in a way that she probably wouldn't have herself in terms of how involved she was in not just the music choices, but being incredibly creative about the music that was made for the film. So Die My Love stars Jennifer Lawrence, Robert Pattinson, Sissy Spacek, Nick Nolte, and it tells the story of Jen's character, Grace, who's a writer and a mother, who her and her husband, Robert Pattinson, they leave New York to head back to where Rob's family live, and it's a much more kind of rural environment. So they've just had a baby. They've just left the kind of the busy, chaotic, loud, fast-paced life of New York. And Jen's character finds herself in a very different environment, not just physically, but emotionally as well, off the back of having her child. And it's really about the journey of this woman. And it's not all doom and gloom. It's so funny. It's incredibly relatable and it's brave and it's just honest as well. I don't want to say more about it because I tell Lynn how I feel about the film in the conversation. So I hope you understand what I'm trying to say when we get there. Now, the score has yet to be released, and the film also features some incredible needle drops, but we're very grateful to Rafe for supplying us with a few of those cues, and we thought we'd start off with the track that closes the film, and it's Lynn's version of Love Will Tear Us Apart. Listen, thanks so much for your time, Lynn. It's so great to chat to you again about this film. I've been watching loads of bits and bobs of yourself and Jen and then the pair of you together kind of talking about the film, and just hearing how much people are taken away from this film that get the chance to talk to you. It's really connecting, you know, with people in terms of, I don't know whether they see elements of themselves or people they know or something. You know, there's just something that's incredibly relatable about this whole collaboration and what it's done. It's been nice to watch.
That's great, you know. I mean, it's been hard doing this press tour thing, but she's great, and it's been kind of funny she make it.
Yeah, totally. If you're going to do press with anyone, like Jennifer Lawrence is a really good kind of shout, because like you say, she's a clever cookie. She kind of knows. Yeah. She's been here and done it, do you know what I mean, in terms of she's so great. I hope you don't mind kind of just going over a few kind of things that we've already talked about, but share with people just the journey of this story and the fact that it was Jen that brought it to you, and just the fact that she saw you in this story, or being able to tell this story in your way, and wanted you to do that. You weren't kind of hooked straight away. You weren't like, I'm in. It took a wee bit of time, didn't it?
It did. I mean, she wrote me an email, and I didn't know this, but the book had originally, like, it was Martin Scorsese who'd read it as part of his book club he's in, which she says we should both join.
Yeah. Hold on, Marty's got a book club.
Yeah, he's got book club. So I knew nothing of this, actually. And then I just get, you know, she reached out to me. Yeah. You know, she was really keen to, you know, she loved my work, which was really nice. You know, and then, you know, we're saying, what do you think of this? And you know, the book is really, you know, like it's very much in our head, the narrator's head, and also it jumps like from one narrator to kind of another at one point. So it's quite a surrealistic, dark fairy tale of a book. And so for me, it was more about finding my way in, like how do I, you know, like it's another really difficult adaptation. But also I using what was great in it as a jumping off point. Until I found my way in, I wasn't going to, you know, just commit to something. You know, films take a while, and she was really keen, you know. So, like, I was writing something else at the time, and then it came up, and it was like there was the more I sort of looked into it, and the more I saw it as a sort of love story and a story about a marriage breaking down, and about being isolated and your creativity drying up, and what happens when a baby comes into the mix, and you know, things like that. It started feeling. But I basically said to her, okay, I'll try. I'm going to give it a go. Yeah. I don't know where this is going to go, you know. But yeah, she was really up for that, and then loved the work that was coming from it.
Yeah.
Because I sent her some music. I sent her like pictures. I sent her paintings, you know. Like I was just like, you know, I did a sort of visual deck as well that was starting to get the sort of bones of the movie, you know, and stuff. So that's how it kind of evolved. From a lot of conversations and and stuff as well over like about the period of 6 months.
Do you recognize what it was when you say, like, I needed to find my inn?
Yeah, because I think, like when people are putting like the labels on it, like it's about this, it's about that,
Yeah.
I felt like, I didn't want to go too much into Kevin territory, even though it's tenuously kind of connected, but mother and son.
Yeah.
But this isn't really about that for me. It's like it's more about, what happens when this woman, I think, starts, and I don't want to be reductive about it, just in the sense
Yeah.
of postpartum, but like, she starts to feel invisible slightly, and but she's a very irreverent character. She's very unapologetic. I'm not trying to, gain sympathy. She never, she's
No.
got, she's got, she's a kind of punk in a way,
Yeah,
and
totally.
she's pretty liberating in a way, even within her psychosis. So there was something I found in the character quite like a freeing, so I ran with that. So I think it's about finding the elements that you feel, okay, I can do something with that. I can go somewhere with this. And like when people make reductive statements, it's about this and it's about that. I don't think it really is. It's quite an experiential film,
Totally.
both musically and with sound as well,
Well,
and obviously the performance like being the center of it, So it never, I never wanted to be too reductive about it. It may be in our past, there's been moments, elements here where Jackson really loved her, but she's in the borderline, She's so out there, but in a very liberating way.
I almost feel like it's a celebration of female in a way, in that sense, in terms of, we do, like, your women are like, they're hard as nails, and they're like, they're just, in terms of what they're able to kind of, like, sort of take on board. And I there's, it's, I haven't seen th I've seen it 3 times now, and every time I kind of, I have a slightly different experience with it. I think that's down to how I'm feeling when I watch it, in terms of the things with the characters, with the relationship that I lean into because of where I am. And I think that that's what makes it such a unique and brilliant film, is that it's kind of living, it's alive in a way. And I just, it's one of the many things that I kind of, I love about it, because not all films kind of give you that opportunity, I think, in a way.
Well, I mean, I always like a film to be an experience,
Yeah.
and it's hard talking about films sometimes. People like to, come up with the pat answers, sometimes. And I don't think that it's one of those kind of films. I think it's like you go on the journey or you don't, It's been interesting how people have reacted to it, Felt making the film, I was going on this journey with her, Like I say, not making excuses, even if she's frustrating or annoying or all these things and all the different aspects of her, there's something in her that I think has a kind of essential truth, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's, well, weirdly, I was talking about Morven Caller with someone the other day. I think with all your films, in terms of the performances that you are able to get out of your actors, or encourage them to deliver, is extraordinary. Whether that is, Samantha, or whether it's Joaquin, or whether it's Tilda, do you know what I mean? It's, and Jen, and all of them in this one, actually, and Robert and Sissy and Nick and stuff. It's amazing. And I wondered, just in terms of when you're starting to build that trust and collaboration with your cast and your collaborators, because I know that collaborating is such a big thing for you with your performers and stuff. Is that different for every project, in terms of you find your rhythm with each other, you find your boundaries, you find how you communicate, I guess.
It can be. I mean, I've been lucky enough to work with these actors that are just willing to go this kind of out in a limb, and be quite bold, I guess, every one of those actors. But it's all about trust. It's all about, like she came to me with this, and I think she trusted me enough, like you can interpret this. And I think it's all down to conversations beforehand. And I mean, with someone like Joaquin, he came like when the crew turned up in New York, it was like 8 weeks before we shot, he came then, to the
Yeah.
actor, and that was really special. We didn't have a lot of prep in this film, but the actors came really early, and prep's everything because it's a bit like cooking. It's like, so I was like, oh my God, got so little time here. But it's, I think it's just creating an environment where you're like everyone feels kind of safe as well. She felt free enough, I think, to just be able to, explore the character in this super dynamic way,
Yeah.
like and be surprising and try things out. You know, I think I gave her the space to do that, and she was excited by that. But it's all about just creating an environment of like that we're all in it together, like, and we're, you know, letting everyone understands what they're doing. And then maybe if I throw a curveball sometimes, like, you know, they trusted me enough to take it on board. You know what I mean? They were like, okay, maybe it's not that we try something different in this scene. And I'm not like that in every movie, but this was a bit more like create the world, let them be free, let them roam, let her be in that house, let her explore that house, let her be bored, let her, you know, be frustrated and fail and all those kind of things, you know. Not hit marks necessarily, not, it wasn't constructed like that. But it was constructed, you know. Whereas something like We Need to Talk About Kevin was much more, I think, like a dance, like it was shot in CinemaScope. It was the, you know, it, you know, the two characters, a real Mexican standoff, it, you know, a different kind of vibe. So the epic and the everyday, you know, always, we always talked about in that movie, you know, shooting it in scope, which is normally a landscape, you know, but it's in, we shoot it in this McMansion in CinemaScope. So every film's got a different vibe, you know, like, you know, and one of the things I knew about this was that I wanted them to be free to move within a space, the space, you know, because they're kind of often she's confined within this house, you know, but also be able to, you know, maybe a run takes long sometimes, and you know, it was like, all right, what do we do now? But there was something cool about that as well. It's changed in hat in character, and some beautiful things came out of that. You know, it was like a spontaneity or trying something different. Sometimes we all need one take, you know. When she wrecked the bathroom, there was no way we could put that all together again. So I think really a liberating part to play, you know, even within its darkness and light, you know. It's funny, and you know, like
It's
she's
so
funny,
funny. The
naturally
humor in
funny.
it's brilliant.
And I wanted that. I didn't want it to be just this heavy thing. I wanted it to be have this like all these tones in it. And so, you know, working with these kind of actors is such a pleasure once you're in that, when you're in the zone. But it's all about the preparation, really, you know, knowing that everyone's on board with you, you know. And in this, it was just like it was very much feeling like we're all part of the crew, we're all part of the same, you know, we were all on it, you know. I think it had a vibe, you know, that comes through in the film.
Well, that spontaneity kind of feeds into like her as a character. Do you know what I mean? That unpredictability of her. It's amazing to watch. And she's almost like, I was like, oh, I wish I had a little bit of Grace's like kind of no filter. Do you know what I mean? I've just like kind of like we all need to be a bit more Grace, like, you know what I mean, in terms of like just saying what you think sometimes. It's like, ah, you almost kind of feel liberated through her. It's just like, oh my God, it's brilliant. So good.
That was one thing I really loved about the character, because like I said before, it was this kind of unapologetic version of whatever she's going in her mind, how she's unraveling. It wasn't like, feel sorry for me and I'm a victim. It was like somehow she feels bold, free, like she's been out some, she's going off somewhere in her own mind, you know. And I think it's only Sissy Spacek's character that where she feels like maybe she sees herself a bit more clearly, you know. But she is very kind of inappropriate a lot of the times, and there's a sort of truth to it, you know, or childlike, you know, and saying things that you'd like to say but you would never would, and I kind of rage in that, you know. But these were all the aspects of the character that, to explore for an actor, I think that was really kind of fun and deep and crazy, and like, you know, like, and also something I think where she felt that she'd tried something new.
When we did the thing a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't believe, so I asked you about a couple of scenes in particular, and I couldn't believe the bit where she barks back at the dog was one of those kind of like have a play. That whole sequence is extraordinary, just in terms of how the build up of that kind of tension of that relationship. And it was amazing. Like weren't expecting her to bark back at the dog. So I think that was just like mate. Just the way even like, oh, it's just it's brilliant. It's so good.
I think it was just like I said, giving them a little bit of a playground, you know what I mean? Like, go, oh, right, okay, you know what I mean? Like, like maybe there maybe been a line in the script where she's annoyed and barks at the dog, but she took it to a different level. She took it to this guy, you know, her husband brings the back a dog, which, you know, she's wanting a cat, you know what I mean? Like, in like, you know, it's like so much to deal with because this dog's really annoying, as well as, like, you know, all the other stuff that's going on in her life and having a baby, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a kind of standoff between her and the dog, and the dog was like naturally quite annoying. So she just reacted and it was great. And I liked that, and I encouraged her to go forward with that, you know, like, you know, just to, there was a lot of really spontaneous reactions that I felt like brought this aspect. Yeah, expect the unexpected, you
Yeah.
know.
What about music, Glenn? You know, in terms of, were you thinking about just how you would work with music with this particular film? You know, in terms of, you know, having worked with Johnny a couple of times on films, and where and how music fitted into this story, both in terms of the characters, their life, the diegetic element, and then the kind of bigger sort of side of, or not the bigger side, but the other side of it with score and stuff.
Things like that are very, soundtracks to me are always really organic. But I mean, with something like Morvan Kallera, like it, which was a mixtape that was left by, you know, Morvan's boyfriend, we made the mixtape, you know, and we played it on set, and we played it while we were shooting. And this as well, we played some tracks that I knew I would use, you know. So the Hey Mickey, for instance, is all there, and when she plays it, it repeats, but it skips, you know.
Yeah.
That was a kind of, I mean, I'm terrible at what if I like a record or something, I just play it over and over again to
Yeah.
the point where it drives everybody mad and they say, please don't play that ever again. And I just thought about her board in the house, and then this kind of idea that the volume changes, and it's just like it has this kind of shift in time as well.
Yeah.
I really interesting, which I kind of tried and You Were Never Really Here as well, like some aspects a bit jumping time slices from the music. But yeah, like in general, I felt, you know, that they maybe in my backstory, they stayed in New York. She'd written a couple of things that she'd been wild and sexy then, and he loved that about her, you know, which he later comes to not know what he'd do with.
Yeah.
And he maybe in a band that never really worked out, and they had vinyl collection, and you know, they would have cool stuff, you know, but also, you know, some old stuff, and so it was partly the music, they had a good collection.
Yeah.
And partly the points of the music would be relevant to where she was at. Yeah. So it was
Yeah.
a bit of like playing that line. You know, at first I thought that maybe it should be a score. But then we looked at needle drops, and the more the needle drops were working, it was like, this is the score, the score is the needle drops. Yeah.
And that reprise of that particular track, you know, in terms it's their song, you know, that thing where a couple have a song kind of thing, you know,
Yeah.
that sort of
Yeah.
that's a really kind of brilliant way of, I guess, a kind of insight to that relationship that kind of comes back in as well at that at those times,
Yeah.
which it works so well. That was Rafe, wasn't it,
Yeah,
played
Rafe
it?
Birchall, who is he coming on
I've just
actually?
actually he's been waiting, and I just was trying to find a right little bit. He's been sitting in the virtual waiting room. Rafe, we're
Okay.
just talking about you, so it felt like the right time to let you in, to be honest.
Hello.
We were so eager, the pair of us. We were in early, so we just started.
Beavers. Yeah, exactly.
But basically, you know, I hadn't actually heard that track, the John Prine, In Spite of Ourselves, you know, and he sent it to me. But I think I was writing the script, and I thought, oh God, you know, it seems so pretty and country and everything, but underneath it is this kind of the real aspects of the relationship, you know, like that's, you know, the real sort of love, but also darkness in it, you know, or
Yeah.
you know, warts and all kind of thing. And I sent it to Jennifer, and she'd never heard it either, so she got quite excited about it, you know. And it was like, and I don't know, somehow, you know, that having the song, your song, you know, like you know, together was beautiful in the terms of the, you know, having a very authentic relationship.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter bunny. She's my baby, I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. I caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. Drinks his beer like it's oxygen. But he's my baby and I'm his honey. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes.
First time I heard it was two of my friends in LA about 15 years ago, two of my dearest friends. They're the most kind of in love couple that I know. They asked me to listen to the song and they played it to each other and they sat there looking at each other and sort of smiling and lovingly gazing at each other. And I remember thinking it was like the sort of most honest and profound kind of depiction of real love, you know, and it just stayed with me. I never really listened to it much after that. And then when Lynn sent me the script in like 2023, I just was like, ah, it just came back to me one morning. And obviously sent it to Lynn and we are where we are with it, but it's such a special song. It's just so honest and it's so waltz and all.
What does play music on set, what can it do? What is it? How does it affect performance? How does it affect, you know, how you and Seamus work?
Well, it affects the performance for sure, you know. She actually danced to the Hey Bicky, you know, like they were dancing to the music in the wedding. It was all about movement. It affects the camera because it affects how you move with the camera, the timing and stuff like that. So, you know, it creates a world and then it really bleeds into everything else. I don't always play music in set, but when it's relevant to the movie, you know, then it's nice to get the timing and the feel and everything all blended while I'm doing it. That definitely works throughout here, you know, like, yeah. And it's at a rhythm as well. Like, you know, people move at a different pace with music, you know, they just physically are different with the speed of the music, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So weird because Mickey was the first 7-inch single I ever bought with my own money. So I was like, oh my God.
It's a killer. Me and Lynn used to go on these drives and get into like, we'd take turns like DJing on these like long drives. And that was how Hey Mickey kept, we sort of got into our childhood. And I think we sort of gone on a bit of a delve on like Bell Stars and like Clapping Song. And Clapping Song was already in the mix from the original version. But we sort of, I think the Bell Stars Clapping Song led us to Hey Mickey. And then we were just like, I remember driving around and it was like, ah, is this going to work? We sort of talked about music so much. I think where me and Lynn, we just sort of trust each other because we kind of felt each other's taste. You know, we got really similar taste and we know we like what we like and we know what we don't like and it's very similar. So it's a real shorthand, you know. But yeah, Hey Mickey's like my childhood.
The other side of that is like, you know, Billie Holiday. You know, I mean that's an absolutely kind of beautiful and inspired choice as well, that one.
Yeah, I wrote that in the scripts, you know, just because I loved that piece, you know, and just felt like loneliness in it. I didn't know if it was sick or we could get it, you know, but there was a couple other tracks that were gorgeous as well that were actually, because sometimes I will mention a track is to give you a kind of feel, you know. And obviously things change sometimes. With Morven Calla, there was a couple of tracks I really wanted that we were just going to get because of the money and, you know, and stuff like that. But it has a flavour and then people kind of recognise it. And it is often really interesting to to have that early, you know, because of the, like I say, it blends into the whole scene. But the Billie Holiday was more for atmosphere rather. We didn't know if that would be the actual track, you know, or we could get it, but we did in the end.
It was interesting because it was so backgroundy, and we tried quite a lot of things in the last couple of weeks on that scene, but there was nothing that came close to it. Even though it was in the same world, it just had something so special. And it's her voice, obviously. It's the feeling of her voice in the room, and her character. And it was obviously Lena put it in the script, and it was never going to budge. It was so good.
Yeah, but you do, then you end up trying things because of the limitations, and you're like, nothing else is going to work. It's a funny thing.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling so sad. I long to try something I've never had. Never had no kissing. Oh, what I've been missing. Love a man, oh, where can you be?
How are you coming to those decisions, Lynn, when you are writing the scripts, you know, in terms of, you know, you're thinking of music that at that early stage, not everybody puts music in the script, but when you're putting, you know, songs like that in the script, where are they coming from in terms of informing their place in your story? Is it, I know
It'll be
you.
from a mood of the scene or a, you know, or just a, you know, it's often she's on her own and I like, I'm like, you know, when I'm on my own play music, you know, so it was really about a feeling, you know, like a feeling a set, and also sometimes you're playing me music, yeah, it's in the background and it's maybe like something that's playing, you know, but it's also got a kind of relevance as well, but very subtly, you know. I hate to be too heavy-handed about things, and it's like, but it has a kind of moodscape, but also where would they be as characters? What would they listen to as characters? But writing it in the script, I don't know, just gives me a kind of like tone. Like it might not be that actual track, not be that actual track, but, and I don't do it all the time. I just like, if it's something I feel quite strongly about, I'll put a track in.
Another element to the music that you don't like talking about it too much, but it's a big part of the film, is the fact that through your collaboration with Rafe and then kind of working out what that music was going to be, you and Rafe and George, who works with Nick Cave a lot, kind of formed a band, kind of in a way, a sort of composer band almost in a way that did created music specifically for the film. And it's all of you collaborating but reacting to these characters in the story. How did that come about?
I don't, it was quite organic, to be honest, because before even making the movie, George of Jessica from, you know, who's the guitarist in the Bad Seeds, he came, and Rafe knows George. He introduced me to George, came right to my place, and, you know, he had the same Gibson acoustic guitar, weirdly. It's my pride and joy, this guitar, even though I can't play. I can play two chords or something, two, three chords.
That's playing, Lynn. That's playing.
Well, he came right, and it was weird because I had the same, exactly the same. Mine was a bit of an older one, and it was John C. Reilly who bought me that guitar. And when I was in Kevin, he went to Matt Newmanoff in New York, and he went in, and I looked at it. It was kind of window licking because it was expensive, and he bought, and it was one of the nicest things that anyone ever bought me, you know. And he came right, and for some, we just started, you know, jamming a bit.
I think you'd written a song called Take Me to Bed, I'm Wrong in the Head, and it was kind of development for Grace, and you sung the lyrics to me down the phone, and you're like, can do you feel like there's an idea that we can kind of
Amazing.
explore? And I sort of felt like George is incredible because he was able to come into the room, and there's so many musicians you can take into a room with Lynn and they just try and swallow up all the space, and he was just so he just sort of just held her very easily, and they got on very well very quickly. Not much was said, and then they started playing together, and it was just really natural. Like with anything that continues in Lynn's world, there's nothing that comes in that doesn't feel there's it's all really natural and very it's just true art. And yeah, I was just sat there watching, and I was like, I actually got it on film, so I was like, I have to film this. It's so beautiful. And they played this song together, and it came from there, really, I think, Lynn, didn't it? It was like there was just a real natural feeling between us.
Well, we're just kind of jamming, and it was never going to be something necessarily in the film. It was just like to be kind of like, just it was just a kind of like Sunday afternoon kind of thing, you know. Like I think later on it was, you know, like I went to George's studio and Rafe with Rafe as well, and then some. We were trying stuff out, you know, and
Yeah.
it was super fun. I'd never been in a situation like that, and I'm not a musician. I don't know anything about this, and I'm not a singer, and I
Yeah, but
don't, not interested in that
you are. I
either.
keep telling you,
I like
I'm not going to
writing
have this argument. You're a
stuff.
musician.
So it just was, you know, just from there it came naturally, and then some of that ended up in the film, you know, because we were sort of doing, we started that early, and you know, I went round there like to George's studio, and he was just playing, and I started singing this song called Zero, and I ended up in the film, and then like just, but it was all meant to be temp. It was all temp for Cannes, you know. I didn't see that as something that I would that would stick. It was just like, all right, we've got, you know, something like this, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just kind of people kind of liked it, and it just kind of stuck, and you know. But right up to the 11th hour, I was like, I don't want to use that.
Did you enjoy it
You
though? Did you enjoy the experience of that kind of another creative outlet, you know, in terms of it's new muscles that you're exercising in a way? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure it was really exciting because like films tend to take ages, and this was a bit more like making a Polaroid, you know what I mean? Something fast, or like I'd written songs because I was frustrated about not making films sometimes. So it was like a little film in a song, you know, or an idea in a song. And that you suddenly you could just do this, and it could be all if the vibe is right. Because I don't think that always happens, but somehow we, me and George, we just got into this thing, and it just was like, yeah, okay. I like improvising as well sometimes, and like, but it was an it, I enjoyed it a lot. It was wild. It was so, you know, it was a nice other thing to do rather than this heavy, unwieldy beast that is a film. But it wasn't specifically, or like we're going to use these things. It was like, let's find the vibe, let's find the right kind of feeling, and see where that goes. And then some of it sort of stuck, you know. But I love music and sound, and I'd, one thing I'd always wanted to do was compose a sound. A soundtrack before making the film, like almost like base the film on the soundtrack, you know. Like for years I've been saying that, so hopefully,
Amazing.
yeah, just like,
Well, now
you know,
you've got your band
an idea.
together.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but definitely it was like it was super fun to be in the studio with this amazing guitarist and just like basically just jam with them, you know, like, and something kind of coming out of it was wild.
Riff, did
It was
you
a
get involved in persuading to keep the music in then?
little bit. I mean, it's sort of it's got its own life, and it's taking stuff out. You just know if it's not as good, like if it's not as good, or it just doesn't work as much. But from my point of view, and I've been in the room with a lot of musicians, and so is George. And when we went out to the studio, what was amazing seeing how Lynn works is me and George were like, right, we got to go and we got to work on these specific scenes. This is what we're going to do. And Lynn would just come in. And she was like, oh no, I don't want to do that. I just want to play some song. And then we were like, oh, but what about the, no, I don't want to do that. And then we, you know, I started playing a beat, and then George started playing this amazing guitar riff. And we turned around and Lynn would just grab the mic, close their eyes. And it was just, you know, I've been around a lot of musicians, and I was like, whoa. And I saw George look at me, and he was like, oh, it was just electric. It was just on.
Oh, that's
And
amazing.
we were there for like 2 hours. It was utter chaos. And then we got in the car, we drove back to London. I just knew we had something, you know, and it was the same. It was the same with, you know, Lynn doesn't like talking about it, but Love Will Tear Us Apart, when she sent me the iPhone recording, which is the recording in the film, Goosebumps. I always know when I want to, like, goose, I get goosebumps and start
Yeah.
laughing. And I did both, full body laugh. I was like, oh my
Think I
God.
was mostly laughing, yeah.
No, it's not,
Okay.
no, that's my, that's my, that's my reflex to brilliance. And it was like, yeah, I did. I, you know, it's, I can see where Lynn, you know, Lynn's reservations were. You know, it's like, it's her film and she's a true music artist in the film, and it's really serious stuff. So yeah, it was just about, it wasn't about persuading anyone. It was just reminding, it was
No, I
just
definitely
let,
didn't want to use
it was a bit, it
it.
was a bit, but
All I can say is thank God for Cannes and the
yeah.
deadline. Do you know what I mean? In terms of like things happen for a reason.
I don't know, like music's so inspiring for film, you know, anyway, in the lot, you know, like, you know, it made me think, okay, I've got to do a bit more music, like, you know, just have fun and like do something that isn't, you know, that's inspiring the film even before making it, you know, that it's just such an interesting creative process. I found it really fascinating. And like Georgia saw this, these analog synths and like great stuff, and I was like, what's that? What's that do?
Oh
You know.
yeah, we actually managed to get, during that Zero session, which is the punk song, we actually managed to get the scene where we're on the bike, because we had some, we temped out that scene on the bicycle where she's cycling to Carl's with, there was some piano, classical piano on there that
Yeah.
was on there, and Lynn was just really direct about not wanting that, and she was like, oh, you know, I want it to be more childish. George was like, follow me, and we went out to this, like, through the garden in the, into the, like, an outhouse where the studio is, and he had this really, like, old sort of synthy kind of analog weird little thing, I can't remember what it's called, and George pressed the button, it's like dum did did dum did did, and Lynn was like, oh, and just sat down and played that melody. She just played that one thing, and I was like, oh my God, grab the phone, that's in the film. It's just,
Wow.
and that was the cornerstone of the score, really, that every piece of music you hear, every violin, it's that melody. It's just Lynn's an incredible top line melody writer. You know, it's the same with the punk song on Zero. The vocal top line melody is amazing.
I just
That,
don't know what the hell I'm doing,
yeah, but
basically.
that's the whole point. That's the
Doesn't
whole
matter.
point.
Yeah, exactly. You
Not
just got
maths.
somebody there to record it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Just leave an iPhone.
It was being able to go into the studio while you're at the same time editing a film was wild. You know, it was really
Yeah.
good. You don't really know what's going to come out of it. And then some of it's going to be crap, obviously, but you get. I don't know. There was a feeling when it was good. There's always a feeling when it's good, and that's
Yeah.
gold dust. You just can't get around that. You're like, ah, this works. It kind of works. But obviously, having like, you know, no musical skills whatsoever, and then having this great, you know, like these great musicians, like who could kind of mold it. It was great. It was fun. You know, it was wild. And you know, I was actually speaking to Rafe the other day. I was like, we should do something. You know, let's just go into the studio again. That'd be fun. You know, like just. It's such a great outlet, just
Yeah.
a creative outlet that I don't know, like is a different muscle, like you say, to the long process that is film. I was like, I need a bit of that, you know, again.
Great. That's so exciting. I've got to mention Seamus as well, just because, I mean, you know, talk about collaborators and stuff. I last saw him at the British Cinematographer Awards that I hosted, and he won an award. Or was he
He's
presenting
always
about? I think he was,
one.
might have been presenting some of the work. Anyway, oh, just gives the best hugs. He's such a good hugger. And I said to him, I was like, when are we seeing it? I was so excited about, because I obviously knew he was working with you on the film. But your guys' relationship, in terms of how you work and what that magic that comes out of you guys working together, he's quite a special storyteller, isn't he?
Well, I mean, he's great, is it? I mean, I've known him for many years now, lives just down the road. And one thing I really love about him is a DP. He's not like a director of photography. He can't what he does with the camera and everything. It's like some people come like they're very technical, and they're talking about all the technical aspects.
Yeah.
And he just talks about the story and the character, and he's very eloquent, a very charming Irishman. And he, like, I don't know, I think it's about getting to the core of it,
Yeah.
and so he's a great collaborator, and I think he's been really kind to me. He always says, "Oh, you're like the second DP, like you're the second camera, like because I think in a way with something like this, I was like, first of all, we were walking into the space where we're shooting in and reacting to it, and then thinking about the aspect ratio, which is the frame you shoot in, and thinking maybe we should do it. Like we were all like, CinemaScope always looks really sexy, so we're all like, oh, it'll be scope, it'll be great, But and then the locations that I dictated Academy as well as a port it's a portrait format, so it's a portrait film in a way, and we tried lots of things, and I was like, I talked about Morven Caller, how I'd loved the work we'd done, the color work, which was shot in a special a film stock called Ektachrome, the reverse like film stock. It's a positive. It has really bold colors, and it was like the heightened emotions, like grace. And we were talking about stuff like that, and he was like, "Yeah, let's try that." So even though that film stock is like it's, I think we had to get something specially made.
Amazing.
Just the ideas were flowing, a bit like music. Like the same thing. It's like
Yeah.
we did this thing called Day for Night, which is like we're shooting during the day, but it's still like night, and it feels like otherworldly, and it's like very dreamlike, and it's very in our head, and that started really working. So it was a lot of testing, experimenting, and finding the right thing for the character in the film. So that was like making music, of sorts. That's
Yeah.
a different way of making music, but that was really fun, and I think because sometimes like you come into a film and it's much more a conventional kind of process. I think
Yeah.
he really liberated like to try stuff out, to try techniques out that we hadn't used in a while or seldom used. That was amazing. Yeah, like
Yeah.
to go that way,
I could talk to you for hours about this film and you and your films and your process and just chatting to you, really. It's so brilliant. The film is really special and you know what I think about it really, really is. And just what we were saying earlier about every time I see it, I kind of get something different from it. I can't wait for the next one, whether it's an album next or another film or whatever it is. But yeah, I hope you've got something else up your sleeve that you're working on, because it's been just such a joy to sit in a cinema and watch a new Lynn Ramsay film. It really, really has.
Thanks. Got a few things up my sleeve, so hope
Yes!
it's so long.
Keep singing! Keep
Yeah,
singing!
I'll tell you the I
Somebody
don't know
get
about
Lynn a
that, but
keyboard
maybe
for
a few things up
Christmas.
faster.
Get a little four track and a keyboard for Christmas if any of Lynn's friends
No
or
way.
family.
I think I've still got two pianos of hers under my bed. She never picks anything up. I'm not joking.
Oh, but you listen, huge congratulations, and also, Rafe, the collaboration on this film as well. It's
Yeah, thank you.
for bringing out a side of Lynn as well, or encouraging a side of Lynn as well that
Yeah.
we get to experience within that as well. It's lovely to
Yeah.
chat to you both. Thanks so much.
You too, Edith.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank
Yeah.
you.
Bye.
Thanks, Ethan. Thanks a lot.
Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing.
as featured in Die My Love, That's Cooks by David Bowie, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Lynn Ramsey and Rafe Burchell. My huge thanks to both for taking the time to talk to us. Also to Rafe and Charles for sorting out that time with Lynn. Really, really appreciate it. Die My Love is on general release now. Please do go and see it. It's a wonderful film. And if you want to hear my previous chat with Lynn on the podcast, which, as I said, was recorded at the Glasgow Film Festival a few years back, then head to edithbowman.com. Follow us on your socials. We're at Soundtracking UK. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel at Soundtracking Extra for huge amounts of bonus content. I'm going to be recording a few interviews, actually, for that this week. So I'll tell you about those on Friday. Because on Friday, on our next episode, we are going to be joined by the one and only Mr. Edgar Wright, who we welcome back to Soundtracking for the, I want to say, fourth time. It might be three, it might be four. But anyway, it's always a pleasure, never a chore. And as usual with Edgar, music features so heavily in The Running Man, but so thoughtfully positioned, both in terms of needle drops and Stephen Price's score. So Edgar Wright, join us on Friday for another episode of Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.